Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, the Ohio Players would like to wish you the happiest of holidays.
Honey, I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. It's December 6, 2010, Washington, D.C., the United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. Oh, yeah. Let's get this party started, and let's get it started right now. You know, Barack Hussein Obama presented the compromise tax plan tonight, and I gotta tell you what, now I truly do understand how Chris Matthews of MSNBC felt when he said this.
I have to tell you, you know, it's part of reporting this case of this election. The feeling most people get when they hear Barack Obama's speech, I felt this thrill going up my leg. I don't have that too often.
Steady.
No, seriously, it's a dramatic event. He speaks about America in a way that has nothing to do with politics.
Okay, he said that if you didn't catch that, he said that he felt like he had a tingle up his leg. Those were his exact words. A tingle up his leg. Let's listen just once more to that tingle that he felt up his leg.
I have to tell you, you know, it's part of reporting this case of this election. The feeling most people get when they hear Barack Obama's speech, I felt this thrill going up my leg. I don't have that too often.
Steady.
No, seriously. It's
okay. He felt not a tingle, but a thrill. I got to tell you what, listening to Barack Obama speak tonight, and announcing that he reached a compromise tax plan with the Republicans, with the GOP, I felt a thrill up my leg. I was like, well, what is this? Do I need to call the pest control folks again? I looked down and I was like, oh my God, not again. I mean, he just sounds so sad. He just sounds so unhappy. Oh my goodness! And it sent a thrill up my leg. He was pouting like the wussy that so many of his liberals liberal hanger-ons are calling him. They're just saying he's a big sissy and that he's a wussy and he's soft and he's a candy ass and all these things for not standing up to the big bad Republicans. They're saying that he is just a punk. Well, we all knew that. He's a Democrat. That makes him a chump right there. But he just seemed angry and petulant and upset and all of that. And he just kept blaming the Republicans and saying that he didn't want to give tax breaks to the rich and all of that. And it was thrilling. I really did appreciate it. I'm gonna sleep pretty good tonight. Just thinking about how upset he was by the whole thing. So our first topic tonight is something that is near and dear to my heart, Barack Obama's loss. Once again, he took a shellacking. This latest shellacking was the compromise tax plan. Folks are going around and they're calling the tax plan, they're saying that it is a tax break for the rich and for the middle class, but it really isn't a tax break at all. It is maintaining the current tax levels that have been in existence for the last, well, nearly a decade. So it's not a break for anybody. We're just simply maintaining the current standards, given that they will expire January 1st. It is very clear. It's a very clear statement that what they did the Republicans and how they did it and what they were trying to accomplish is what I would call the audacity to win. And I tell you what, there is such a gap between the clarity and the focus of the Obama the campaign of this past month and the confusion of the presidency. Newt Gingrich said, President Barack Obama still hasn't internalized last month's midterm election results. He just suffered a stunning defeat. And yet, he's behaving as though nothing has changed. That's because he's tone deaf. He doesn't really understand that he took a shellacking. I mean, he believes that we simply just don't get it. We don't understand him. He's misunderstood. And he needs to get his point across more forcefully because, after all, the American people are a bunch of Homer Simpsons. We don't really understand that he's trying to do what's good for us. That he is trying to, he is acting in our best interest. And so we're just not intellectual enough to fully comprehend all the goodness and light that he is attempting to bring to our lives. You know, it's going to be harder for Obama to soothe the left as he moves toward the middle than it was for former President Clinton because incoming House Speaker John Boehner is a less polarizing figure than Newt Gingrich was. He's caught in a dilemma which Bill Clinton was faced with. And I gave Clinton a certain amount of cover because he could always say to the left, at least I'm not Newt. Bonner's not going to give him that kind of cover, Newt Gingrich said. Gingrich told Fox host Chris Wallace that Obama will lose in 2012 if the economy remains weak, no matter what he does. And I agree with that. I couldn't agree more. President Obama is so far to the left that he has polarized the entire nation. Given that we are a center-right nation, maybe 20%, I think the number is 20% you know, a hard left, and then there's a group in the middle there, and then there's about 41% Republican. So he's got to appease the middle, and then so far he's losing the hard left. So it seems like he's between a rock and a hard place. If we're still at 9 or 10% unemployment in 2012, this is a one-term president, no matter how articulate he is. Well, you don't have to be all that articulate to read a teleprompter, do you? I mean, really. And the war on Christmas continues. And we'll get into that in a little bit. Barack Obama is no Bill Clinton. He's far more leftist. He's at least as ruthless, which is really saying something because both Clintons are among the most ruthless American politicians of our lifetime, as it's been borne out. His outlook is far more alien to middle Americans in that he really does believe much of middle America is stupid, clinging wrongly to God and guns, as he put it during the campaign. Unable to think clearly under pressure. Too stupid or ignorant to know what's in their own best interest. And he doesn't share Clinton's neediness for short-term person-to-person feel the love, positive reinforcement. His goal isn't personal connection. We know that. Because he seems rather cold. That forced smile he has, and that smug, I'm smarter than you persona. No, his goal is not personal connection with voters. It's long-term adulation and adoration, verging on worshipfulness, as a lot of Democrats seem to subscribe to. He wants to be seen as a world transformational figure, a virtual gift to mankind. Clinton, for all his faults, actually did empathize with individuals. Obama doesn't empathize. He pities. We're so stupid. We're just a bunch of dumb hicks clinging to God and guns. I wonder if he didn't slip up and say we were clinging to our God and our guns. The object of pity is not an object to respect. So he doesn't really respect the citizens he serves. He merely wants to tell us how to live. For what he imagines is our own good. But it's a cold, super rational, but far from reasonable, hyper-judgmental conception of exactly what characterizes the, quote, good, end quote, in the first place. Not to push this analogy too far, but at times he reminds me of an automaton, an unfeeling machine who simply thinks but doesn't feel. One gets the impression that Obama would be perfectly happy if all of us bounced our basketballs in unison, in synchronicity. With his aim being to enforce absolute conformity with the claimed benefit of eliminating war, unhappiness, and inefficiency. Again, this analogy shouldn't be pushed too far. This is not to suggest that Obama is evil, but only that he seems in a rather bloodless way to want a society that marches to a uniform beat, dictated by him from above. Even if not evil, his vision is the antithesis of freedom, not to mention astonishingly creepy. Obama is perfectly willing to push executive power, actually executive fiat, to the limit. The blizzard of regulations or administrative rulemaking, divorced from congressional intent, that will come in the next 2 years will be staggering. You mark my words. So will the executive orders. The privilege claims against public disclosure will be extravagant. He'll use the IRS and other administrative agencies, and perhaps even the Justice Department, to harass political opponents. And he'll keep trying to find ways to empower union bosses and trial lawyers, leftist nonprofits and interest groups. And he'll use AmeriCorp, the other federal outlets, and other federal outlets to help organize quasi-political efforts. And everything, absolutely everything, by hook and by crook alike, will be aimed at creating a vote-generating machine. And I do mean generating votes, not necessarily real, live, eligible voters. And it'll be unprecedented in the annals of American politics. This is, after all, a man who looks with a fair amount of disdain rather than pride at American history. He sees our flaws and imagines other flaws that didn't exist. He despises our ally, Great Britain, and had my man Churchill's bust removed from the White House the single day he took office. He resents our ally, Israel, and doesn't really mind leftist agitators such as Venezuela's Hugo Chavez. He believes corporations are inherently evil, unless, of course, they're partnered with or dominated by and directly answerable to government, i.e. GE, General Electric, and that his crony and his buddy, Jeffrey Immelt. He believes not in a free market, but in a managed market. Certainly not in entrepreneurship, but in incentivized investment, both private and especially public, for the supposed common good. Obama is, to use the vernacular, an entirely different breed of cat. He does not think in conventional American political terms or conventional societal terms. This is extremely worrisome and problematic. While some escapes from convention are devoutly to be desired, his model of action does not even nod to convention at all, and thus not to establish a valuable societal norm. We want to celebrate American civilization, and Obama wants to redefine it. Ronald Reagan famously advised Americans to trust but verify. When it comes to Obama, conservatives should verify without trusting. We can even give him credit for what, by his own lights, are noble intentions, while knowing that there really is neither nobility nor admirability in them. To deal with Mr. Obama, then, is, well, conservatives will need to keep our cool and keep our wits. But in so doing, we must not be cold-blooded. We act not in hatred for what Obama stands for, but through love for our country, our Constitution, and civil society, the better angles of our nature, or angels, or angles, or both, guided by a very tough-minded realism, and this, and in this, we shall prevail. I'm counting on it. All right. Happy holidays. There is a reason why I played Happy Holidays, not aside from the fact that it's a really cool song, and it's a Christmas season staple in my house, and it was when I was much younger. It was always playing somewhere in the background in our home. The conclusion of Thanksgiving, originally a day of solemn acknowledgement that all that we have that is good is a gift from God, brings us to the celebration of the greatest gift from our Creator, the incarnation of our Savior, Jesus Christ. And just as many have seen fit to ignore the giving of thanks to God on Thanksgiving Day, so too have countless others designed to divorce the birth of Christ from Christmas. The reason for this disturbing disconnect vary, but the main one seems to be that the worship of the deity recognized by the great majority of those in this country might be the cause of offense for just a few. God himself accepted, of course. And so in a few weeks, we will, in just a few days, we will commence the season of attempts at discrediting Christianity and its founders while distancing Christmas from any connection with him. One of the most common ploys will be to claim that the date itself is nothing more than a pagan observance. Now, most scholars have agreed that the date of December 25th, derived from pagan Rome's celebration of Natalis Invicti, birth of the deity Mirtha, the sun god, But this should not, and it has, as it has become fashionable, justify the notion that Christianity is an offshoot of paganism, even though Scripture is filled with literary allusions of the Son of God. For just as celebrations of the first Christians coincided with Jewish festivals, because they, as the spiritual children of Abraham, shared in the first covenant, so too the first children of the church established in Rome by St. Peter and Paul share in a synergenic that's not easy to say, relationship with the pagans, whose worship of Mithra contained many Christian elements. Whether the origin of the date of Christmas, whatever, and despite the fact that it is not officially commemorated by the church until the 4th century, it is celebrated by believers today as a sign of God's love and fidelity to his promise of redemption. Yet, the war against Christmas continues. So ingrained is it in our collective culture that its symbols remain a large part, even of its commercialization. So as you wince at Madison Avenue's aspect of Christmas, meditate on both the Christian and pagan signs that the Promised One is indeed coming. Think about that. So, in that spirit, the war on Christmas heats up. An atheist group's new billboard proclaims the holiday is a myth. New Jersey's Lincoln Tunnel features a sign with three wise men apparently en route to a manger, along with the message, "You know it's a myth. This season, celebrate reason." The war on Christmas is in full swing. I generally don't get my worldview advice from signs, nor do I expect do most of the drivers venturing into the city of New Jersey. If the American atheist who paid roughly $20,000 for the sign want to add a message of reason to this time of year, it's certainly less intrusive and annoying than the constant loop of Mariah Carey's "All I Want for Christmas." It's already haunting me in my dreams. And as a practicing, questioning Christian, I am in very strong agreement with the belief that church and state should firmly be separated. And with the concept of civil rights for all Americans, regardless of their point of view. Because shoving your beliefs on other people is just plain rude. I mean, really. Do you even see where I'm going with this? Whether or not you believe in a perfectly swaddled little baby Jesus who arrives precisely on December 25th, surrounded by a nice-looking donkey and a few shepherds. That's hardly the point. It's that snooty, oh, just face it, you idiot, attitude. That utter certainty that's just as belligerent coming from an atheist as it is from an evangelical. And perhaps they should just find something else to do with their time. That's why in the season that's sacred for a variety of faiths, take broadside aim at just one group. Why? Ask yourselves why. Why in a season that is sacred for a variety of faith, take aim at just one faith? Sure, yeah, Christmas is the biggest fish in the December pond. But I can't help wondering how well a billboard featuring that same message and a menorah would have played. Maybe while they're at it, the American atheist would like to lay out for some smaller, yet just as pointed, "Your religion is BS" messages timed at Ramadan, perhaps. See how that plays out. Huh. Now, the American atheists say that the intent is to get atheists who are going through the motions to stop. Funny how they didn't actually say that in the billboard, though. It's even funnier that the organization itself says that atheists love to validate their myths by trapping atheists into a philosophical discussion of knowledge and certainty. Interesting. Well, moving right along. National Public Radio's firing of the talented and amiable Juan Williams for comments he made on Fox News about Muslims is outrageous. It's even disgusting. But it's not an aberration. It is emblematic of the dictatorship of virtue imposed on Americans by the country's elite. Many of them, like those at NPR, publicly funded and, of course, unaccountable to the American public. Judging from the responses to Williams' firing and the immediate extension of his multi-million-dollar contract with my favorite news source, or Fox News, it looks like he will thrive. But arrayed against the unchecked power of elite multiculturalism, who knows? Americans of all political stripes appeared mystified by NPR's firing of the highly regarded Williams after he gave Bill O'Reilly something resembling an honest, if not completely innocuous, rendering of his feelings about flying in airplanes nowadays. I guess stating that, hey, when I get on the plane, I've got to tell you, I think he said, if I see people who are in Muslim garb, I think, it bothers him a bit. He gets a little nervous. I think that's what he said. It's interesting that the elites believe that it's inappropriate to say what you think about anything. That even your thoughts, honest thoughts, can be construed as politically incorrect. If you think that, perhaps maybe you're a little scared, maybe you're a little afraid, don't say it. Be careful. Because even thought will be construed as being politically incorrect. Now, the coalition that got Barack Obama elected president just 2 years ago, well, basically it's in tatters. It's done. They're all over the place now. Nobody really seems to feel as though Obama is their guy anymore. He's fallen off his pedestal. Now, for him to game out the trajectory for the next 2 years, well, it can be done a number of ways, but Obama's efforts to rebuild a politically robust alliance that'll be the most telling. It may be the biggest challenge of his career. And he'll need a lot of luck, along with some skill, if he's going to pull it out in 2012. A survey of the political landscape shows that many groups who were part of the 2008-2009 Obama coalition, well, they've turned on him. Liberals believe he's an over-compromising wimp, as I stated earlier. The business community considers Obama ignorant about markets at best, a socialist at worst. Some people believe he's both. The media, after kissing his butt the whole time on his way to the White House, now see the president as incompetent and overwhelmed. Hence, is the president too big for one man? When was that headline ever written before? Not for Roosevelt, not for Lincoln, not for Washington, not for any president was there ever an article written. I checked. Never before in the history of our country has it ever been suggested that the presidency was too big for one man until Barack Obama. It seems that the media will find any excuse to cover Mr. Obama and attempt to cover up the fact that he is utterly incompetent and overwhelmed. The independents and Republicans who backed him for office currently feel he's too liberal and too weak to do the job. Hence the New York Times article, is the presidency too big for one man? The views of the elites are clearly shaping how the president is perceived by the nation in general. With unemployment high and promising to stay there, it is nearly impossible in the short term for Obama to shift opinion and be seen as a successful president. But he can't achieve anything in 2011 and 2012, or even get reelected unless he can win back support from some of his core groups who seem to be abandoning ship like rats. Rats into a sea of hungry cats. The already tiresome debate about what Obama should do to launch a comeback tells only part of the story. Yeah, he needs to show people what he stands for, but he's already done that. He needs to fight for what he believes. He's done that, which is why we have the results of November 2nd. Compromise with Republicans when it's sensible, he's done that, and still, his base is frustrated and ready to abandon ship. All those things are tall orders, and he has stepped forward, and his base is leaving him in droves. They're calling him a wimp, not ready for prime time player. Even if the president stops behaving like the Tin Woodsman with no heart, and gets rid of that Spock-like demeanor and gives us that fired up and ready to go persona, he isn't going to be able to change many of the dynamics that have weakened him so far. Republicans are emboldened by the results of the midterm elections, and their steadfast discipline in driving the same message since Election Day, and likely well into 2011. Well, they believe they can beat Obama for re-election and will stay on their winning path as long as it's working. And liberals like Nancy Pelosi, who are frustrated and rattled and are poised to cry betrayal whenever the president cooperates with the GOP. And that rancid freak show of a political, media, industrial complex is as toxic as ever. Should President Obama confront these dynamics, he will still need a lot of luck. Busy as he's been, destroying the country and ruining the economy, he's not yet experienced a major moment that has benefited him politically. The most dramatic events of his term, the BP oil spill, the passage of that atrocious health care law, the arms control agreement with Russia that is yet to be ratified through Congress, have no impact, or perhaps has had a negative influence on Mr. Obama's standing. No one, certainly not me, or anyone, I believe, want the country to suffer another catastrophe. But when a struggling Bill Clinton was faced with the Oklahoma City bombing, and a floundering George Bush was confronted by 9/11, they found their voices and a way to political revival. Perhaps Obama's crucible can be positive. Perhaps maybe the capture of Osama bin Laden, or the fall of the Iranian regime, or perhaps a dramatic technological innovation that revitalizes American manufacturing, something to reintroduce him to the American people and show the strengths he demonstrated as a presidential candidate. Gee, I sure hope not, but perhaps one never knows. While he stumbles his way through the lame duck session of Congress, and prepare us for his sad and sorry State of the Union address, and prepares the budget and braces for the new normals of 2011. The president, well, he better figure out how to react when the moment comes without that damn teleprompter. Because without the moment, whatever it is, and his lack of leadership, Obama will find that his luck has run out. And quite frankly, I feel so much better about it if it did. I mean, really. Our next topic, the DREAM Act. Seems like Dirty Harry's working his magic trying to get that thing through. And it doesn't seem that it's going to work. But he's going to really try. And we're going to take a short break, but I'd like for you to listen to this because I think it's really funny and I like it a lot. And it has a lot of bearing on our next topic.
I don't know if this is a good idea, son. Using funk.
But, Dad, we gotta reach out to our base somehow. Besides, I love James Brown.
What would your mother say?
The border goes from coast to coast. Easy to get into here. We got intercontinental overload. Slip under the fence. It don't make any sense
when there's no documentation.
That's too far. And somehow or some way we're gonna find out who you are.
Sneaking in America.
Trying to hide from immigration.
Sneaking in America.
Across the land. Across the nation.
To the next topic. The DREAM Act, a priority of Democrats in both Congress and the White House. Well, apparently it's facing a pretty difficult future. Even as Democrats in both chambers prepare to consider the measure, Republicans and centrist Democrats are already lining up to shoot it down. I don't think that's going to make it. And even though we got this deal done, the lame duck session is probably going to be concluded without the DREAM Act being put to the vote, which is a really good thing. It's really you know, the climb to get this done is really steep in the Senate, where Republicans will, they'll filibuster that bill. Even former sponsors of the bill stand in opposition. Senator Orrin Hatch, for instance, was the lead sponsor of the original DREAM Act when it emerged 9 years ago, but already facing pressure from conservatives surrounding his 2012 reelection bid, the six-term Utah Republican is sprinting to the right, away from the proposal, which is a good thing. So, hopefully we can dispense with the DREAM Act, move on down the road to other things, more important things to America. And I can't wait. Now, speaking of keeping within the same vein of Barack Obama and his failure to light up the night sky and keep his coalition and base with him, former CBS Evening News anchor Dan Rather is predicting that if the Bush tax cuts are extended for 2 years, as was done earlier tonight, President Obama will face a tough primary challenge from the left. Appearing on MSNBC's Janice and Company, Rather said, and I quote, "This is a political nightmare for Barack Obama as president. The more left portion of his party hates this with a passion, and politically, within his own party, if this goes through, Barack Obama will be in a position to have his shirt tail on fire, his back to the wall, and the bill collector at the door," which is metaphorically a way of saying he's almost guaranteed, if this goes through, to have a serious challenge in a Democrat primary for president in 2012. Wow. Okay. I wonder who it'll be. Any thoughts? Rather went on to add that the perception of Obama is that he won't fight for anything. He also noted many of the heavy contributors to the Democratic Party are beyond shock about this happening. Well, it's happened. We're done. It's happened. It's a done deal. And I'm happy about it. No taxes being raised on anyone. That's a good thing. That is a very good thing. So now, many of the contributors to the Democratic Party are in shock. And they're saying to themselves, this guy, well, he has about 4 to 6 months to turn the perception of him and the party around, or we're going to start thinking about somebody else in 2012. This is what Rather is quoted as saying. Obviously, a serious primary challenge could greatly hurt Obama's chance of being reelected. Yeah, of course. Comparisons to Ted Kennedy's primary campaign against Jimmy Carter, which many believe fatally wounded Carter politically, and thank you, Jesus, for that. Well, that would likely become the dominant media narrative, wouldn't it? This is something any incumbent president, especially one already been compared to Carter, should avoid like the plague, but he can't avoid it. It's unavoidable. These folks are jumping ship like rats. And speaking of Jimmy Carter, he's not helping things, is he? He certainly isn't helping things at all. You know, there used to be a code among former presidents that you didn't speak ill of other occupants of the White House. For example, in the summer of 1998, President Gerald Ford was asked about President Clinton's personal problems, and he said that he hoped that respect for the presidency would be restored soon, and that was all he said. He kept his mouth shut after that. And a couple of weeks ago, W also declined to speak about President Barack Obama, showing the classy side of him that we always knew was there. But former President Jimmy Carter is apparently, well, he doesn't keep the code. On his recent book tour, Carter, well, he's taken to blasting the Republican Party, both Bushes, and even Fox News, especially Fox News. Speaking on a liberal NPR radio program, Carter put forth that public broadcasting networks on radio and television basically tell the honest, objective truth. And he went on to say, I think the Republicans who want funding for public broadcasting cut would like for everybody to have one channel that they can watch every day, and that's Fox News. That's what Carter's quoted as saying. Since there are very few conservative commentators on the public broadcasting payroll, while dozens of liberal pundits are collecting paychecks, a fair and balanced claim by the committed liberal Carter is really quite suspect. But his hatred of Fox News, he calls Fox vicious, is interesting in light of his stature. And Carter's main beef seems to be that the media is not totally dominated by left-wing MSNBC, CNN-type programming as they were during his time in office. If you analyze the campaign between Carter and Ford in 1976, you'll find that the media tilted heavily toward the man from Plains. Ford was portrayed as a bumbling fool on Saturday Night Live, and that was often echoed by the press. And the fact that Ford pardoned Richard Nixon for Watergate, well, that didn't help. But now it's obvious that Obama, who's getting roughed up pretty good, that Carter doesn't like it one bit. In fact, the former president has even implied that some of the current criticism is racist. Carter is obviously a big Obama fan and is very, very protective of him. Like a massa to his slave, his prize buck. And there's nothing wrong with that unless you become hysterical, which Jimmy Carter has. And I do believe that Carter identifies with the Obama administration, because the same kind of problems that sunk him, the economy and Iran, just to name two, are also a thorn in the side of Obama. And Carter doesn't believe that he received a fair shake in the court of public opinion, which is why he went around building houses everywhere he could. Cheap, low-cost houses that fell down around folks. He believes Obama's in the same boat. Thus, he's acting out like a petulant parent, or perhaps a protective parent. But, you know, Carter should remember that he once held the most prestigious position this country has to offer. And running around whining about, whining, old, tired old man whining about unfair media coverage and nasty, mean Republicans is beneath his stature. Or maybe he doesn't think so. As much as Carter loathes what George W. stands for, He should take a page from W's posture on public criticism. Shut the hell up, Jimmy. It's making you look old and small and stupid. And really old, really small, and really stupid. Well, that is going to do it for us tonight. We're going to conclude this broadcast, and we're going to talk again tomorrow, because we have so much more to get to. And of course, I can't wait. So, I wish everyone a wonderful night and a happy day tomorrow. And we'll talk again. Good night, everybody. Sleep tight. Don't let the bed bugs bite. And you can bet your last money it's all going to be a stone gas, honey. I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. Good night.
Twinkle, twinkle, little me, I have a lovely light. I'm the star upon your tree that makes your Christmas bright. Mm-hmm. Twinkle, twinkle, little me, left the Milky Way just so I could come and be with you on Christmas Day. Angels brought me where you are, and heaven gave me life. I'm that friendly little star you wish upon each night. Twinkle, twinkle, little me, I have a present too. And if you give unselfishly and make a wish come true, I'll always shine for you. Hi, kids! Look out the window. You see that little star way up there? The one that's all alone? Well, that's me. That's right. And this Christmas, I'm coming all the way down to where you are just to light up your Christmas tree. And I hope to light up your heart. Well, twinkle, twinkle, little me, I have a present too. If you give unselfishly and make a wish come true, I'll always shine for you. Twinkle, twinkle, little me.